Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are hearing oral arguments by Zoom today. The last case on our calendar is A22-0845, Allison Hurst versus Charles Hurst. We are recording the oral argument today. I'll just remind anyone who's viewing that no other recordings are permitted without the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. A copy of the audio recording will be available on our website tomorrow. To counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes for your argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a clock that will be visible in the grid view screen that displays the amount of time you have left in your argument. I'll just ask that when you get started, if you please identify yourself and the party you represent, that's helpful for the recording. So counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sean Reed and I represent the appellant William Hurst in this appeal. At issue in this appeal is whether the district court violated Mr. Hurst's fundamental rights as a parent and whether the district court abused its discretion by denying his three parenting time motions. Those motions included the following. Number one, to discharge Paradigm Therapy Services. Two, directing that therapeutic services be furnished by alternative professionals. And finally, in the alternative, we sought an order for direct parenting time. Those motions were all brought after Paradigm Therapy Services unilaterally abandoned the therapy for the appellant William Hurst. The court held in this matter on May 4th of 2022, denied each of the three motions, and it generally held that Mr. Hurst was the party hindering his relationship with his children. Now, since this matter is a matter of parenting time, the standard of review here is an abuse of discretion. And a district court can abuse its discretion by either misapplying the law or relying on findings that aren't supported by the record. It's our position in this case that the district court applied both the law and the facts in the case.
Also, before you proceed for any further, I'd just like to clarify the arguments that you're raising on appeal. Are you raising, it sounded like from your introduction that you're raising two separate arguments. First, a constitutional argument, and second, an argument that the district court abused its discretion with regard to the motions pending before it in terms of, I think you argue that the evidence isn't sufficient to support certain findings. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I should maybe, and thank you for the question, Judge Cochran. I did anticipate that. We did raise in the brief the fundamental right of being a parent that's recognized by the Troxell versus Granville decision. Now, I do recognize that counsel is correct when it addressed in its responsive brief that issue wasn't briefed at the district court level. I'm really not raising it as a constitutional issue here today, but rather to demonstrate how important my client's right as a father, his right to go ahead and parent his two children are. And I think the court has some latitude to consider that in the proper context, notwithstanding the Thiel decision. I draw the court's attention to the Weston versus McWilliams and Associates decision, that's 716 Northwest 2nd at 634, which basically stands for the proposition that this court has wide latitude to address any matter as the interest of justice may require. Now, I can't think of any more important case or that justice requires, you know, as the right as one to be a parent. It's a fundamental right. Now, it's in this case, put in the context of the last argument just heard is completely different, but being a parent is a fundamental right recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court. So we're really not raising it as a constitutional argument, but to place this in the proper context. Does that answer your question, Judge Cochran?
Yes, I think that's helpful. So basically, you're arguing that the district court abused its discretion in denying the motions, and you're not, you're providing that as the constitutional right to parent more as context for the argument. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So really what this case comes down to is whether the district court abused its discretion. Now, and I stated earlier that I think the court misapplied the law and the facts, and I'll touch on both of them in a moment. But before I get to them, I've started every argument before any court I've appeared on this matter with a recitation of the number of days that my client has been denied his parenting time. And I'm going to do that again here today, because that too places this in proper context. Today, that number is 1,404 days. Days since he has been able to exercise his parenting rights. That goes back to May 24th of 2019. Now, my client's been fighting for his parenting rights ever since.
He may have been fighting for his parenting rights, but we have a district court that determined that your client, the father, was the primary cause for the delay, because he didn't get around to calling the therapist, and he wasn't an active participant, that's my words, not the district court's words, as far as the reunification. So, you know, I hear you talking about he hasn't had any time, but I want to say the record contradicts that, because it appears that he's created that situation. Could you respond to that?
Yes, and thank you for that, Judge Work. And that's where.
And it's Worky, the E is pronounced. Thank you.
And I apologize, Your Honor. I was going to ask you as to that. Thank you for the correction, Judge Worky. And that's where the district court and I disagree. I believe that the record actually reflects that my client was an active participant in the reunification process. And a helpful aid in our brief, we attached it to our addendum, was a chronology of events. I'm not sure if that came through in color, but we kind of color coded it so it had blue shading for the interactions that my client had with Paradigm relating to his son, and then pink, obviously, for his daughter. And by my count, my client, with respect to his son, had over 14 individual meetings with Paradigm staff. That's just him and Alan Haney. He then had three video sessions between Alan Haney himself and his son. So that's 17 contacts. With respect to his daughter, my client had 8 to 9 in-person meetings with Paradigm staff. And I just want to draw the court's attention that with respect to the daughter, it's been kind of a rotating shift over at Paradigm. First, it was Heather Markovich, then it switched over to Kayla O'Connell, and then finally to Ashley Rhodes. And then my client, after those individual meetings with Paradigm staff, he had one telephone call and two video calls with his daughter. So I think the record really reflects that he was actively participating in that process. Now, to your point, Judge Werke, the court did indicate, well, why didn't you just call? You could have just picked up the phone and started this process, because again, the wheels came off the bus on January 7th when Ashley Rhodes wrote the letter saying, hey, we're going to cancel your in-person session with your daughter. And Ms. Rhodes basically cited reasons for that. Number one was the issue of the apology. Two was the issue of hair color. And finally was this issue of the Christmas gifts. And with respect to each of those, I think the court got the Christmas gift issue right, because the court properly noted that my client wasn't just going to bring one. He had this whole list of stuff that he was going to bring. The district court, however, misapplied the facts as it related to both the apology and the hair color. The apology issue, as I've indicated in the brief, has been a form of a moving target. They've defined this apology first as an apology for making the daughter uncomfortable. Then it was defined in the context of, hey, it was improper for you to have your daughter in your bed with you. And then finally, it was defined as, well, you just have to say something indicating that you're sorry for the situation. But the important thing is...
Mr. Reed, just...
Yes.
I understand your argument that from your client's perspective, the apology was a moving target, but you would agree that we do not reweigh the evidence, correct?
Correct. I understand that. You're determining whether the district court abused its discretion.
And in doing so, we look at whether its factual findings are clearly erroneous.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
And with regard to the apology, the district court's order finds that the transcript reflects that that father refused to apologize. And in looking at the transcript, there's the transcript that father himself provided of the meeting with the therapist. There's numerous times where father says he doesn't agree that he needs to apologize, and says he will not apologize. So how could we conclude that the district court clearly erred in its findings regarding the apology given father's own statements in the transcript?
Thank you, Judge Cochran. This court can conclude that the district court erred factually when you have to look at it in the entire context. The apology issue itself, regardless how you want to define it, Paradigm agreed that they would table that decision, or not decision, I'm sorry, table the issue of the apology. So in other words, if they're tabling the issue of the apology, my client at that point in time, and that was just prior to the January 11th meeting with his daughter, was under the belief, the reasonable belief, that we'll address that later. So at that point in time, he had not ultimately reached the decision whether he was going to apologize or not. So in the context of the tabling of the apology, that's where the district court made the error when it came to the conclusion that he refused to apologize. You have to look at it in the context of the tabling. My client believed, based upon the therapist telling him, we're tabling this issue, don't worry about it, we're going to have the session with your daughter, we're going to have fun, we're going to play games, your daughter's looking forward to it. Likewise, the issue with the hair color, again, and I won't go into great detail because it's briefed in the brief, but it can be summarized as this. Mr. Hurst, I want you to be aware that your daughter has a different hair color. We want to avoid any negative reactions to that. And so there was a discussion over that. And again, the client said, well, I don't like it, but hey, let's move forward. And so they were trying to avoid the negative connotation or reaction if that was presented to the daughter. And what did Paradigm ultimately do? They turned around and told his daughter, your father does not want to apologize and doesn't like your hair color. They created the issue that they were trying to avoid. What that creates for Mr. Hurst is a breach of trust. And this goes back to Judge Warkey's original question. How can it be that, why didn't your client just pick up the phone and call? Well, this creates such a breach of trust that he can't move forward with these therapists. Likewise, we have to look in the context of the fact that they abandoned the therapy on February 14th themselves. And interestingly enough, not for anything that my client did, but rather they're upset with my questions of them. And that specifically, they stated, this decision not based upon any interaction or action Mr. Hurst, Ms. Hurst, or the clients themselves. So what we were doing to try to bring this motion in front of the court was to try to get some movement forward, try to get some oversight of these therapists. Now, again, it's important.
So to that point, Mr. Reed, I don't recall seeing any request in your motion for oversight over Paradigm I thought the motion was to dismiss Paradigm. So that seems like kind of a new argument. And also in terms of the record, the record does reflect the letter from Paradigm saying they wouldn't provide further services, but then the district court found and is included in the record before us on appeal that Paradigm said that reconsidered and said they would if, you know, certain conditions were met. And so the district court found that Paradigm was still willing to provide services. I think if Paradigm wasn't willing, the district court would have discharged them. So,
And I apologize to the court when I said oversight. It's me being a little bit loose with my language. You're correct. We sought a motion to discharge and direct that therapeutic services be provided by other alternative professionals. Conditions put in that Paradigm listed. There were about eight of them, and the district court basically went through a number of them and basically said, listen, both Attorney Portwright and myself, we're professionals. We have the right to question what's going on. And that's what I really did. And I say I'm almost out of time, so I'll finish this answer. So what happened when they unilaterally quit after the breach of trust, it's really unreasonable to have my client expect him to go back to Paradigm for these services. My client has been fighting for 1,404 days to be a parent, to his children. He's been fighting this fight since 2014. We're asking the court to reverse the decision, send it back to the district court. Unless there are any other further questions, I'll stand down.
Okay, thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Terry Portwright. I represent the respondent and mother in this case, Ellison Hurst. I may be brief, but on behalf of my client, we stand by the brief that we filed and would just like to point out several highlights. I heard counsel say earlier that the focus he had on the fundamental right to parent was to provide context to the court. Nowhere in his brief does he say, I'm providing context to the court. He argues that his client has a fundamental right to parent and presumably implies that that is without bounds. And obviously, if there was a fundamental right to parent without bounds, we would not have child protection cases or terminations of parental rights. We would not have child maltreatment findings and the like. And so it does seem as though Mr. Reed was making a constitutional argument, which has never been made prior to this brief. Should the court find that the issue of the fundamental right to parent is important to look at, I would note for the court that the case that's referenced looked at grandparenting time. It did not look at how a parent gets to treat a child. And in Minnesota, we look specifically at Minnesota Statute 518.17 and .175, which says the fundamental right to parent exists, but within the boundaries of what is in a child's best interest. And after evaluating the 12 best interest factors that are in the statute, a court, a district court, certainly can limit the parent's time if the court concludes that the child or children's emotional health and development would be hindered by some sort of normalized parenting time. As counsel noted, he is also arguing that the district court abused its discretion in issuing its most recent order. Its most recent order mimics the order that came out after a multi-day evidentiary hearing. I believe that was attached also to counsel's initial brief. And as this court can see, those two orders are very, very similar. Counsel,
there's some additional findings in the more recent order that I think appellant challenges in his brief. The finding that father's actions were the primary cause of delay. Can you address that argument as to whether the record supports that finding?
Thank you, certainly. And so as the court can see through attachments that counsel provided to both to this court and to the district court, there were transcripts of sessions, there were chronologies provided, all of which show the delay in his clients accessing the therapists and reestablishing his relationship with these two children. I have to say, he does start every single hearing that I've been in with noting how many days his client has gone without having a normalized parenting time with these children.
I need to interrupt on that, Ms. Portwright. And, you know, and I'm not advocating for either of the parties, but, you know, the fundamental right to parents is, of course, subject to the boundaries of the best interest of the child. I agree, but the best interests of the child now are not going to be the best interests of the child as she grows up, and you can't go back and get that time back. So, you know, we don't even have studies on that. How is this child going to be affected in her adult life if she hasn't had any meaningful time with her dad? But I'm building up to a question. I just wanted to say that because everybody seems to be talking about how much time he has or hasn't had. This court, and I should have asked this question to Mr. Reed, this court has 90 days to make up its mind on the outcome. And Mr. Reed likely wants us to reverse or send it back to the district court. And then you have to go back to the district court. And then we have more time that's passed. And the parents, to me, it seems, need to have some kind of a program for where they go from this point on, or you're looking at another year having passed by with nothing happening, only because it's tied up in the muck of the court system. My question to you is, if this is sent back, if we agree with Dad's attorney, what happens from your perspective? And I'm going to ask him the same question. Because, you know, if we agree with your client, that's another question. Tell me how it works both ways. If we agree with your client, we affirm the district court. What happens? What's the reality of what's happening with this child and both parents?
Well, there are two children. One is soon to be 18. And sadly, the father has missed the last 3.5 years of that child's life based on his own actions. And I think based on documents that were provided to the district court and to this court. Regarding the daughter, certainly that child is in a different developmental stage today than she was 1,404 days ago.
But I mean, my question is this, if we agree with you and we affirm the district court, what happens? And then what happens if we would reverse? I mean, what happens? How are the pieces going to be picked up after you're done with this hearing today and you leave?
To the best of my knowledge, the children are still seeing their therapists, and the father still has the right to call those therapists and start working with them again. And
that so is it fair to say then that after everyone gets off of this Zoom hearing today, that father can go to the telephone and he can call the therapist and he can say, let's get going on this. Regardless of how it comes out at court, he can call the therapist and say, let's get going.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
That's probably a good idea.
And I presume could have been doing that throughout this. In other words, what is there any barrier? Has there been any barrier either from Paradigm's end or other than what you're saying about father, but any barrier not related to father? In other words, is barrier somehow, is Paradigm a barrier to that? Would Paradigm have been working with and will continue to work with father to reestablish parenting time?
Not to my knowledge. I would note for the court that Paradigm does no longer exist, and the therapists that were seeing the children are now at a new therapy services company called Birch and Pines.
And father is aware of the therapists and where they're at and what their phone numbers are. Correct. So the only thing stopping him is himself. Is that a fair statement?
That's our position. And that was the district court judge's position.
Because is it the case that any therapist that the children has been seeing has been open and available and agreeable to do therapy with involving father around reunification?
Yes.
Has that always been available to father, therapy for reunification purposes with his children?
Since I have been on the case in 2019, yes.
So Paradigm had certain conditions though for restarting therapy with family therapy anyway, right?
Right. So
and what, given that Paradigm no longer exists, what is the status of that?
It's my understanding both therapists continue to be willing to work with dad regarding both children. So just returning to a few thoughts, Your Honors, we believe that the district court did not abuse its discretion. It very carefully analyzed the information that was presented to the court. It very carefully laid out under the statute why the father should be working the reunification plan that had previously ordered. As this court has noted, there were some additional findings because time had passed and the father had refused to do certain things. But the district court kept joint legal and joint physical custody for these parents, gave the mother primary placement, and laid out a plan for what dad needed to do to reunify with his children. And we believe that that was very clear, it was defensible, it was supported by the facts and the law. And based on that, we are asking that the court uphold the district court order. Thank you.
Counsel, can you address appellant's argument that it was really Paradigm that has been a barrier to the progress by, well, at least with regard to the daughter, and by canceling the in-person meeting and informing the daughter of about the conversation, and you know, when the idea of an apology was tabled, but then instead the meeting was canceled?
I can try, Your Honor. And certainly those issues were raised at the motion hearing that resulted in the court's order that's being appealed right now. I'm not going to pretend to be a therapist or pretend to know why they may do what they do or how they do it. But it was clear from the evidence presented that one meeting was canceled to allow the father to have another one-on-one with the daughter's therapist prior to moving forward with the daughter's sessions. And the father then refused to do that one-on-one session. It's also my understanding, and I just lost track of your middle question. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I just don't remember your middle question.
Oh, I just wanted you to address father's argument that it was really Paradigm that's been the barrier to therapy moving forward with the daughter.
Thank you for that reminder. Yes, he made that argument at the motion hearing. The district court addressed that. And the district court even found that while it may not have been particularly pleased about some of the communication, it was not finding that Paradigm had prevented or was refusing to provide therapy to the two children.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions from the panel? All right, thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Yes, perhaps if I can respond to, and I think was it Judge Warkey's question or questions, I'm not sure, apologize to the panel if I forgot the source. So the question that was presented to counsel was, well, what happens next? If this order stays in place or if this order is reversed. Well, first of all, I'll just note that certainly this case represents a tragedy. I mean, there's no question that that the children and my client can't get that time back. I've been arguing that for a long time. If this court leaves the order in place, and that basically would leave the Paradigm therapist, I'll just call them that instead of the Birch and Pine therapist, because it's the same individual therapist, but at a different location. Counsel is correct in that. They stay in place, and that same level of mistrust in the individual barrier that we've been arguing about remains in place. what else supports this barrier issue or this mistrust issue is my client's been working a long time trying to work a paradigm to make sure that everyone gets a fair shake. And it started off really poorly.
Counsel, yes. Just going back, though, there isn't any reason father couldn't contact their therapist now to restart the therapy process, correct?
Absent the breach of trust that it clearly exists, yeah, there's nothing that physically prevents him. There's no order that prevents him from doing so. But I would suggest that the history of this case and the experience he's had with the paradigm therapist is indeed a barrier. A real clear example of that is January.
If he still has the ability to go forward and we have the past behind us that can't be reobtained, you know, I think we're digging up a lot of mud that doesn't really affect the outcome of this case. My question I have for you, I did have a question. And my concern is that I reiterated that we have 90 days to make a decision. And so often in these contentious family law cases, we as judges hear time and time again, court system. And I just want to make it clear that it's not the court system here, because as I understand it, and here's my question, there's nothing now today when the screen goes blank that's going to stop your client from picking up the phone and starting to move forward with this again. So it's not that you have to wait until there's a decision. I mean, do you understand that?
I do understand that. My client understands that there is no order in place that prevents him from doing so. It's rather the nature of the existing relationship that's causing the problems, that's preventing the parties from moving forward.
And counsel, with regard to that point, I understand your client's view of the situation, but and your argument about mistrust, but you do agree that the therapist who he was talking with is a therapist for the child, not for your client, correct?
Well, that's where it gets a little murky, because the therapists are wearing multiple hats in this case. They're serving dual roles, which creates probably the issue that we have here. In a perfect world, the children would have their own individual therapist. There would be a separate therapist that would be guiding and working with the children's therapist as a reunification process. When we have the therapist serving the dual roles, that creates this issue of who are they responsible for? And that's part of the reason why we sought the motion to have them discharged and have alternative professionals be appointed.
I thought, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the record reflected that this particular therapist was the child's therapist, that the parents had their own individual therapists, and that at this point it was still working, you know, the father developing parenting time through first phone calls, then video calls, and then in person, but this therapist wasn't serving as father's therapist. The person was serving as the child's therapist.
And again, I respectfully disagree with that. First of all, I agree that the father and the mother had their own individual therapists. Paradigm was serving as the children's therapist. They were also providing family therapy, and they were also acting as reunification therapists. So that's why we have this multiple hats.
So did this therapist have, well, I'll go back and look at the record, but I don't recall that the therapist ever agreed to not disclose the conversation with father to the child.
I don't believe the record does reflect that. I think our position, our response to that is, was just one of shock that they would try to, they're trying to avoid the negative connotation. Had they just canceled that January 11th meeting and done nothing further, and that'd be a different situation. But they canceled that meeting, then they told the daughter, listen, your dad does not want to apologize and he doesn't like your hair color. And that creates this whole issue that they were trying to avoid. Now, again, I'm going to agree with counsel. I'm not a therapist. I'm not pretending to be one. But common sense would tell us all that if we're trying to avoid the negative connotation, you don't go out and say it. And I see that my time is up.
Okay. Thank you very much for answering all of our questions. You can sum up quickly if you like.
We're just simply asking the court to reverse this decision so these parties can move forward. I think if anything, we demonstrated that the parties cannot move forward as they currently exist. Yes, there's no order in place that prevents my client from doing so, but the severe lack of trust deriving from the breach of trust that was created just cripples everyone from moving forward. And I think the best thing that this court can do for this family and these children is to send this back to the district court and allow the parties to move forward. I appreciate the time and your attention.
Judge Cochran, may I just ask one question just to pinpoint this? So what you want, I understand the difference between the types of therapy and your, I think I understand what you're arguing. And the child's therapist is who dad was talking to. Was the child's therapist that one human being, that same therapist, the one at Paradigm and now the other place that's meant to perform all roles?
The answer to that is yes. They were performing all the roles.
And so what you want is not only that there be, what you asked for, I guess, is not only that there be, or maybe not even that there be a different therapist, family therapist or reunification therapist, but you want the child's therapist to be replaced as well. Is that right?
Well, that was the original.
Is that what you asked for? Okay.
That was one of the original motions, and that was more in the context when they abandoned the therapy. Now, I understand that those individual children therapy is ongoing at Birch and Pine, but in a perfect world, what we really need here is that individual reunification therapist who the children aren't the clients. Really, the way I view this type of work is when you have a reunification therapist under a court order, really the client is the court. And the reunification therapist reports back to the court how the parties are moving back together. And if we have some process in place, and quite frankly, I really hope that sometime in the future that the state district court system can come up with some sort of uniform plan like this to try to address this in a uniform fashion. Did that answer your question?
I guess I'm not 100% sure whether you asked the district court to have a replacement of the child's therapist. And if that's what you're, and the district court said no, and you're asking for that, but maybe I just don't.
Well, we brought three motions. The first motion was to discharge them, and that was in the context of the abandonment. The second one was to replace them with alternative professionals. And the third one was an alternative motion in the to allow for direct contact.
Okay, thank you.
And Judge Cochran,
Reed, I have a follow-up. Yeah, I here's where my confusion came in about the role of the therapist too, because in the email or letter that's in the record, that the conditions that Paradigm provided for restarting therapy were that another Paradigm therapist will join family therapy sessions and will take them over as per the clinical judgment of the providers. This will allow for the children's therapists to have individual relationships with the children. So it doesn't sound to me like the current plan is that the children's therapists are going to act as the family the therapist for the family during family therapy sessions. That's what I was trying to get at. In this conversation that the daughter's therapist was having with the father, it was in her role as the daughter's therapist. It was not to provide a family therapy session.
Well, there are a couple questions in there. So first I'll try to...
Anyway, yeah, sorry, you're right. I apologize.
I'll try to address them and I apologize if I miss any of them. You're correct. One of the conditions that they had in that multiple list of conditions to restart was that they would have another therapist within Paradigm step in. And the problem with that seems nice. That seems like that would solve all the world's problems. Here's why it doesn't. It's a therapist that's working under the umbrella of Paradigm. It's still all in-house. What we need is someone from the outside that will coordinate and work to get this thing rolling. But if it's under the Paradigm umbrella, we're basically doing the same thing. And we know this because there were three therapists already in place for the daughter. And I apologize.
But the district court found otherwise. The district court found that it would be in the child's best interest to continue therapy with Paradigm. So we would have to find that the district court clearly erred in that regard.
I would agree with that statement, yes.
Okay.
Did I answer? I know I didn't answer all your questions, but I lost the thread for the last.
Well, no, that's my fault. I apologize. But no, I think you that sufficiently answers my question. So any further questions from the panel? All right. Well, thank you to both counsel for helping us better understand the case. We will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.